welcome back to But Why Though the Podcast, and today we're covering a Christmas movie classic, Die Hard. As always, I'm Kate, and here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And yeah, I'm not leading this episode because I think there are like multiple episodes where I explained that I had never seen Die Hard, but I have seen two of them now, or like 1¾ of them. So now I can talk about it and Adrian can lead us through this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Die Hard because it's Christmas time. And my intro question is, I think, a point of contention with some people when it comes to Die Hard, but just very simply, is Die Hard a Christmas movie to you?
Yes. I don't know why apparently it's being brought back and people are saying it's not, but it is, and it always has been, and it's always been the best Christmas movie. I don't care about your damn reindeer. I got Bruce Willis in an air vent talking to the dude from Family Matters.
What about you, Kate?
Carl.
I think it is. I think it is just because I think whenever you set a film in a holiday setting, that becomes that film. Like, there are some, like, debates whether or not, like, is this a film that is embodying the holiday or is this a film that's set during the holiday? But, like, every Christmas movie is just something set on the holiday. Like, A Christmas Prince is just a lady meeting a prince on Christmas. So I think by those standards set up by Hallmark and a lot of Netflix now, Die Hard is most definitely a Christmas.
Yeah, the argument that I see against it is like, well, this could have happened any time. But
so could majority of Christmas movies.
But I disagree because this dude's a cop in New York. Why? What is he going to go over to go visit his wife across the country during Easter? Like, no. Like, that only, this is only going to happen during Christmas. So I think it has to happen during Christmas. And if it doesn't happen during Christmas, then you don't get him, like, wrapping a gift, a gun to his back. Or, yeah, like, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. Like, that doesn't work at any time other than Christmas. And funny enough, like, the second movie is also in Christmas. So basically, it has two Christmas movies in the series. So for production history, it's kind of weird just because, like, this isn't, it's an action movie with stuff goes boom and John McClane, like, runs around. So it's not like a, I don't think this is going down in the film registry anytime soon, basically.
Compared to some of the movies in there, I think it should.
Maybe the first one.
The first? No, I'm not arguing for all of them. I'll argue for the first one.
Yeah, so, and this kind of gets kind of like a weird-ish start, and then it just kind of rolls on from there. So when we talk about Terminator, there was a whole bunch of different things that kind of like went into it where it was kind of just like a fever dream. This one, this series is more of like adapting stuff and kind of taking what stuff already exists and adapting it to be an action movie where you can go and enjoy a bowl of popcorn. But it turns out pretty well for the majority, I think, of the movies. So Die Hard itself is a series, is an American action film series that originated with Roderick Thorpe's novel Nothing Lasts Forever. All five films revolve around a character of John McClane, who is played by Bruce Willis, who is in one movie New York City cop, and then another movie a Los Angeles police cop detective guy, who basically continually finds himself in the middle of violent crisis and intrigues where he's the only hope to against disaster. So he's like not a spy, but just kind of gets thrown into stuff, not in the kind of same way James Bond does. But yeah, he basically is just a cop. Like, that's really it. He's just a cop. No superpowers, no...
He's not even, like, no a high-ranking cop, either.
Yeah.
He's just... literally a cop.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't have any, like, F1 experience. He's not from the streets. Yeah, he's just a cop. So, Nothing Lasts Forever, basically, the book from Roderick Thorpe, was actually made into a film in 1968 of the same name, starring Frank Sinatra, and was a box office success. When a movie based on the sequel called The Detective went into production, which is basically kind of the basis of Die Hard, the studio was contractually obligated to offer it to Frank Sinatra to be the lead role. At this point, Frank Sinatra was 70, and Die Hard's getting off the ground, and he turns it down, obviously, because do you really want a 70-year-old Frank Sinatra crawling through a vent with a lighter and jumping off of a building with a fire hose? Probably not. So they change stuff around in the story, and then this then Die Hard basically gets greenlit. When they are getting the McClane to, like, when they're trying to cast McClane, they go through like a laundry list of actors until they get to Bruce Willis. So notable actors who were in the running, who he may have had as John McClane: Richard Gere, Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds, Sylvester Stallone, Harrison Ford, Don Johnson, Nick Nolte, Mel Gibson, Richard Dean Anderson, and even Arnold Schwarzenegger. All of them turned the roles down. Every single one of them turned it down and did not want any part of it. I think just kind of back to one of our more recent episodes, Arnold Schwarzenegger turns it down because he's at the end of by this time in like the late 90s, he's already starting to be a more comedic actor anyway. So that's why he turns it down. Everyone else kind of turns it down because they didn't really believe in the script and they didn't think that John McClane was like a believable action hero. Eventually, they landed on Bruce Willis, who had already had experience playing a detective on a TV show called Moonlighting. But he also turned down the role initially because of his contractual obligations to Moonlighting, but accepted the show when the show went on hiatus for 11 weeks because there was a pregnancy in the female co-star who was opposite of him. So he decides to go to do it, and then he gets a $5 million contract to be in the movie, which at that time was like the largest largest payout for a movie star at that time. And despite paying him $5 million, the studio still didn't think that he'd be a big enough draw. So they basically like didn't market him on any of the posters. They just had like the tower as the main staple, you know. And in the documentary Movies That Made Us on Netflix on Die Hard, they talked about how people were laughing in the theater when they saw him in the trailers. So they just didn't really market him too much, despite paying the dude $5 million to be in the movie. Die Hard also has Alan Rickman, who you may know as lots of things, but probably most notably for the public is Snape in Harry Potter. Die Hard was basically his first feature role. He started on Broadway, and it was another one of those things where there's like the directors and the writers saw him and they're like, yeah, come do this movie that we're not sure if anyone's even going to like. And he went and did it, and it turned out pretty well. And we'll talk about kind of Alan Rickman's impact on the series a little bit later when we start getting into why those. That's kind of really it I have for production history. There's like a lot of like nitty gritty screen rewrites and like writers changes and like all this other kind of stuff that happens when you make movies. But the movies that made us on Netflix, I think, will give you kind of all of that. I just really want to talk about like the movies themselves and kind of how we go from a detective in a tower vent to him basically blowing up helicopters and things like that by the end of the series. So in case you haven't seen Die Hard, or if you don't remember which Die Hard is which, especially because the newer movies stuff kind of gets a little bit crazy, and even when we were talking about doing this episode, you couldn't remember which one was the fourth one and which one was the fifth one. I'm going to do a quick recap on like what they are. If you are interested, and I hope we do put this in the show notes, there's a punk rock song that summarizes the first three movies when the fourth movie was coming out. So there's not like a fourth or fifth verse that summarizes them. But if you like punk rock music and you like Die Hard, there is a really good YouTube video of that. And if you are a patron and you have our show notes, I have it linked in here, and it's pretty good. It's playing in my head right now, and I'm resisting the urge to sing the song because it's really good. So Die Hard itself was released in 1998, and it was directed by John McTiernan. 88, sorry. Yeah, it was 88.
They go back in time to do the sequels.
So Die Hard was released in 1988 and was directed by John McTiernan. He is notable for Predator, The Hunt for Red October, The Last Action Hero, 13th Warrior. Two of those movies, of course, have Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. So makes sense that they did offer him the movie at the time. So this one is pretty straightforward. John McClane goes to his wife's Christmas party at the fictional His wife's Christmas party?
Christmas party, right? Christmas movie.
Yeah, his wife's. Exactly, good. Yeah. They didn't go to the Thanksgiving party or the Easter party or the Halloween party. Although a Halloween party may have been pretty interesting for this movie, actually.
Yes. But no, it's definitely one of those when people ask about it, I'm like, this whole movie revolves around a Christmas party.
Yeah.
I also would have been very down for a Halloween party.
Yeah, where he is like dress up and like outsmart the German terrorists. That would have been kind of cool. Let's rebook it. Yeah, so goes to his Christmas party at the fictional Nakatomi Plaza, and German terrorists take over and are attempting to steal bearer bonds, and John McClane intervenes to save the day. Very basic, but very good. There's a bunch of quipping and action, practical effects, Alan Rickman being Alan Rickman, Bruce Willis being Bruce Willis before he, like, gets grizzled and shaves his head. Pretty good movie. Very, very enjoyable, and it's definitely one of the best action movies there is. Like, it's one of the best action movies. Then we start going into Die Hard 2, and if you get Die Hard 2 and Die Hard 3 confused, this is why we're doing this. So Die Hard 2 was released in 1990 after basically the big commercial success of Die Hard 1. This one is directed by Rennie Harlan, whose notable movies are Nightmare on Elm Street 4. I think that's the Dreamcatcher one, if I'm not mistaken. Cliffhanger, which is basically Die Hard on a mountain. Deep Blue Sea. And Devil's Pass were his notable movies. So the second film takes place 2 years after the first, again on Christmas. John McClane is waiting for his wife in Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. airport, when the former U.S. military mercenaries take over the airport comms and basically do a bunch of demands. They want basically to free a Latin American dictator. Long story short, McClane stops them and blows up a plane, like, on a tarmac.
This movie, smoking a cigarette and, like, lights it to, like, watch the flame go all the way up to the plane.
Yeah, it's less normal guy is fording terrorists and more of kind of like a big action flick, which makes sense because you have the guy who did Cliffhanger doing this movie. So way more action. I don't think it's nearly as good as the first one, but still pretty enjoyable if you like, you know, popcorn action flicks where people light cigarettes and watch planes blow up. Die Hard 3 isn't called Die Hard 3. It's called Die Hard with a Vengeance because for whatever reason, why movies, franchises like just to make their names crazy instead of just saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or whatever the case is. You have Die Hard with a Vengeance in 1995. McTiernan comes back for Die Hard with a Vengeance. Now McClane is back in New York City, separated from his wife again. He's suspended from the police force and is a borderline alcoholic. A terrorist played by Jeremy Irons threatens to blow up places in New York City unless McClane can solve his riddles based on Simon Says. Irons is playing Alan Rickman's brother from the first movie. This is the one with Samuel Jackson, and basically the two of them have to stop the terrorists from robbing the Federal Reserve by the end of the movie. I did find out that there is an alternate ending to this movie on their special edition DVD, basically like where Simon wins and McClane gets framed and like thrown off the force and all this other stuff, and then he has to go find him in Russia or something like that. So there's a whole other ending to this movie than what you actually get. Whoa. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
I don't know. This movie's underrated. I know everybody remembers always the first two and they always forget this third one exists, but I actually really like this one.
I like this one more than the second one because it kind of gets back to like the, you know, the whole thing that you're talking about what we'll talk about of like, he's just a normal dude who kind of just gets thrown into this thing and has to stop terrorists again. And he's not really blowing anything up. He's just trying to like outwit people.
He's hung over the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And Samuel Jackson is pretty good because it's Samuel Jackson being Samuel Jackson running around with Bruce Willis. I know Kate, you've, are in the process of finishing to watch this. You're basically done with the movie. It kind of ends as you would expect it to end. But what are your thoughts on this?
I love it so much. Like, I loved it so much more than I thought I was going to love it. Like, just, like, it's really good. Specifically the way Samuel Jackson and Bruce Willis, like, interact with each other. Because, like, Bruce Willis is clearly the brawn and not the brain. Like, he strategizes, but he's not going to ask what's 21 from 42, and he's not going to solve a riddle or anything like that. So it's really cool to have Samuel Jackson step in and do that piece, because the entire time, like, Samuel Jackson plays the trope that I really, really love in action movies, which is the why am I here? I do not want to be here. You keep trying to get me killed. Please stop, man. And so I think that works really well, and I think the film overall, I'm an hour and 40 minutes into it-ish, like, as we're recording, it's on the screen in behind us, because I knew I needed to watch it, and I just really like it. It's really well done. It's really well paced. Like, I'm surprised by how much I liked it, and I'm sure this is what Adrian was expecting me to say, but Jeremy Irons is really hot in it. So
yeah. So I told you to watch that one, not the other one. Because...
also, yeah, whenever I recommend really Die Hard movies, so
yeah, yeah, we'll talk about that too. we'll talk about that.
So no, but no, I do really like this one. I actually forgot that this one was made. I guess because there's a giant gap or whatever, because there is that 5-year gap after the 2-year gap, and I think people sleep on this movie. But no, I do like this one more than the second one. The second one's the one I always forget happened. I remember I've seen it multiple times, but it's one of those, like, it doesn't stick in my brain the way this one does, or the first one.
Yeah. So if you want an even bigger gap, Die Hard 4, a.k.a. Live Free or Die Hard, in 2007 comes out.
You know, and we start trying to bring back our great childhood feelings, apparently, so we're just going to bring everybody back.
Yeah, basically. And this one is directed by Lynn Wiseman, and his basically contribution to film is Underworld. And that's basically like all he does. But you have the Underworld
director.
Better
than Waterworld.
This is true. Also better than a lot of the stuff that the second guy did. So it's good. And this one takes place on Independence Day. So we're not doing Christmas no more. Now we're on Independence Day. So I'm saying, like, if we do more of these Die Hard movies, we're just gonna do one on each of the major holidays and just call it one of those kind of movies. This happens a decade after Die Hard 3. McClane, again, divorced, now estranged from his daughter, who's played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Cyber terrorists hack into computers. If you haven't got it by now, like, terrorists is a big thing for Die Hard. Lots of terrorists all the time. Hack into the computers at the FBI, who sent McClane in to bring in computer hacker, played by Justin Long, for questioning. Assassins hired by the terrorists try to kill Bruce Willis and Justin Long. Basically, the terrorists are actually in the middle of a fire sale, which is a crippling cyber warfare attack on the national infrastructure, power, public utilities, traffic, and other computer-controlled systems. Although the terrorists capture McClane's daughter, McClane, and Justin Long's character, McClane ends up foiling the criminals and saves all the hostages and, like, reconnects with his daughter and wins the day. I like this one more than I thought I did when I was trying to remember which one this one was. I think it's more interesting to have him, like, pair up with Justin Long and, again, be the why am I here guy, and him just being like, what is a computer? How do computers work? What is a cell phone? Is basically what he does throughout the entire movie. He just wants to, like, shoot stuff. The only thing I don't like about this movie is I believe this is the one, like, where he shoots himself in the shoulder to kill the terrorist, but they bleep out the yippee-ki-yay end part because 2000s movies aren't made the same the way that 80s and early 90s movies are, basically.
I'm trying to look it up and see what the rating was to this movie, but no, I believe it's this movie that does it. I can't remember if it's this one or the last one.
No, it's the next one that's the worst one. And
no, I'm talking about, like,
your 15% or below metric.
Yes, but no, I was going to say, obviously, this one I don't think it's that bad, but I do. Yeah, it definitely, the Yippee-ki-yay blink sensor is one of the worst parts of this entire franchise. And I don't care.
Yeah, you haven't seen this one, right, Kate? Yeah, I think it's better than people get it credit for. I mean, if you like Justin Long, if you like Bruce Willis,
this one's actually not rated as that bad, to be honest.
I wanted to watch it because of Justin Long, because I love Justin Long. But it took me 27 years of my life to watch the first Die Hard, so here we are.
So holla at you in your 40s is what you're saying.
Exactly. Then I'll finish the franchise. I do want to go see 2, though. I do want to go back and watch 2 because 3 is really good, and Matt said that 2 is also good, so I'll take that metric.
I like 3 more, but 2 is still good.
Yeah. So then you have Die Hard 5, a.k.a. A Good Day to Die Hard.
That's such a bad name. Yeah, well. God.
And this one is directed by John Moore, who basically his only real big movies, and these aren't even like big movies, but like the movies that I thought would be recognizable to people when they heard it, Behind Enemy Lines and Max Payne.
I forgot Max Payne was a movie, but I totally saw that.
Yeah. I've totally seen it. The best part about that movie is the soundtrack. Ever that, you could care less if you ever watch it.
Yeah, that's basically how this movie works, because it's very complicated, and I tried to, like, summarize it as best I could, but basically, McClane's other kid, because in the first movie, we see that he has 2 kids, and we don't know where the second one is until now, he has another kid, and who is arrested in Russia for murder, McClane goes to the courthouse to basically pick him up. Russian terrorists, because again, terrorists, but this time they're Russian, so it's different.
I mean, you can track America's enemies through these films, or like enemies and bunny quotes. Like you can check who's the American boogeyman.
Yeah, you had the German terrorist, then you had the American terrorist gone rogue, then you had cyber terrorists, now you have Russian terrorists. I don't know what you would do in the next one, but probably something terrorist. They bomb the building, blah, 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 chase scene, everyone gets away. You find out that it turns out that his son, who is played by Jai Courtney, is a deep undercover CIA agent trying to stop terrorists just like his dad, but this time he's an actual CIA agent, so it makes more sense that he's actually starting to stop terrorists. Basically, the terrorists want weapons-grade uranium for nukes reasons. A bunch of betrayal stuff happens with side characters. Basically, there's too many characters in this movie. A bunch of betrayal happens. At the end of the day, the father and son win, and they reconnect, and like they kind of like walk off into the sunset. Like I think they just like walk off at the end of the movie, if I remember. They just like walk off. This one
is garbage. Is
pretty bad. There's a bunch of explosions. The plot is too crazy. There's like betrayal and things like that. Like it's just too much.
Like I said, we go from New York City cop to just kind of run around the city. Like we get in the third one to whatever the hell happened in this movie.
Yeah,
this movie is awful.
It's not very good, and we'll look at the ratings here in a second because it's bad.
Just makes sense because they specifically ask for John McClane, and it's because of the brother stuff. So like that at least makes sense as to why he's doing something that's like this and not like direct thing. And this is like uranium, world domination. I'm like, oh, this is very different.
Now, basically, the first three actually go very well together for the most part, and then you can clearly see the shift of obviously times because there's a 12-year period between the third one and the fourth one, and it just they go to I don't know. I know the fourth one's not that bad, but to me, it's still hard to. These go from a hard, like, rated R movies from, like, the 90s to, like, PG-13 movies. And it's kind of hard to watch, especially if you watch the first ones, and especially, like, the third one, as you said. Like, they drop a lot of F-bombs. They say a lot of language. They kill a lot of people. And then it turns into we can't even say the famous catch line in the entire fourth movie.
I just love the third one because that, like, blonde-headed lady just, like, cuts everybody up.
Yeah, I don't even remember if they even say it in the fifth one.
I don't think they do say it in the fifth one, to be honest.
Which has got to be really weird, especially for people who are with the franchise for so long, just because it's like, this is iconic. Because I hadn't seen Die Hard for so long, but I knew that that was the catchphrase that went with Die Hard. Like, I understood that. Or I understood that whenever a TV show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine did a reenactment of Die Hard or did a parody episode, that was going to come up and it was going to be bleep, but you know what it was going to be said. And if it didn't have that and a white muscle shirt, then it wasn't a Die Hard thing. So that's got to be really weird to watch.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Because this is also one of my mom's favorite franchises.
Yeah, because cool. I'm trying to like watch like a supercut of him saying it, and like he kind of says it in four, but he's like yippee-ki-yay, gunshot. So like he grunts it as he's shooting himself. In this, there was supposed to be a six movie slash like television prequel thing, but it never gets off the ground, and it's essentially like one, it shouldn't happen anyway, like we don't need it, but also because of when Fox got taken over by Disney, it scrapped that being made for the television series, basically.
So no Disney way they did one good thing.
yeah
so if you are one of our patrons, then of course we'll have the kind of reviews of the movies and their box office performance. But if you look at Die Hard on Rotten Tomatoes is a 93%, Die Hard 2 is a 68%, Die Hard 3 is a 52%, Die Hard 4 is an 82, and the Die Hard 5 is a solid 15.
It's also one of those to see because the first three are obviously made well before Rotten Tomatoes exist. So it'd be interesting to actually look at those reviews to see like how many people watched this in 2019 and said, oh my gosh, I could not stand myself to watch this movie.
And if you look at box office performance, I mean, the movies don't do terribly with the exception of fifth one does pretty bad comparatively, but they all do pretty decently. And overall, across the five movies, it's made $1.5 billion, which is, you know, a release of a Star Wars movie.
Is that adjusted? Like that's adjusted for inflation, correct?
I think that's just straight.
Oh,
straight money.
Oh, that is straight money. That's not even adjusted for inflation. Never mind. That's got to be making a lot more money then.
That's a lot without inflation. If only
this is the 80s.
Adjusted for inflation, but you know, Box Office Mojo hates us.
I can tell you right now, the fact that the three movies, or at least two of them made, what was it, $100 million? Yeah, all of them made, like, even at 1988 worldwide, $140 million. That's not bad to me. Like, that's got to be at least a good $600 million now, if not more.
I mean, and Die Hard does it on a pretty small budget. I mean, $28 million is still a lot, but comparatively to the rest of the franchise, it's pretty good, considering it made $140 million worldwide. Moving on from there, we do have video games that I didn't know existed. I didn't even know they existed. I think there's like 10 or 15 of them.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I think there's like 10 video games across
what
the thing, ranging from.
What was he doing in those? Were they at least just like? Oh, this
so
is
I remember the one for the NES, but that's about the only one I remember.
Yeah, it's basically a in the game. It's a vent crawling simulator. That's basically. Obviously, I have really no idea, but they have games on the NES to the GameCube, Xbox One, PlayStation, and the PC.
Wait, so there's a
basically.
Die Hard one that we could play today.
Yeah. Yeah,
that I did not know.
And there's also mobile games if you want to play it on your phone. I guess I didn't even know these existed, but they are in existence. There were video games.
I knew the one from the NES existed, but that was it, and that was a long, 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 long time ago when they made games and everything. I did not know there was that many, and I definitely didn't know they all the way went to the GameCube and Xbox, original Xbox, and then like PlayStation. I didn't know we made it that far.
Yeah, I was also very surprised. I would have liked, I mean, I think it would have been cool if they did. I mean, by this time, arcades are dying, right? But if you had, like, an arcade kind of, like, in the mode of Time Crisis where you get to, like, hide behind stuff and kind of shoot stuff, I think that'd probably be a
pretty good
Die Hard game.
I thought Time Crisis just
was
basically, like, arcade version of Die Hard.
For comics, there was a comic run in 2009 with Boom Studios. They announced that they'd be releasing an ongoing Die Hard comic series that would serve as a prequel to the first movie. It's a story set in 1976 and follows John McClane as a rookie cop in New York. 8 issues were released, and it's basically what the TV series would have been based on if they would have released it.
I'm kind of glad we didn't get that TV series, I'm not going to lie. I just,
yeah, it'd be interesting. Like, I don't know who'd play, like, I don't know who I would believe to play a young John McClane in the early 2010s.
Gordon Levitt?
No, we're not. Okay.
I mean,
We're moving on from that.
But he this has. True. I'm not wrong.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Yeah. Stop booing me. Yeah. I'm right.
All right. So from there, we can kind of get into some of the but why those. Again, full disclosure here, like, this isn't like Terminator where it's an action movie but it does crazy things with cinematography and things like that. It's basically a different action movie that kind of changes the genre going into the 90s. And my first but why though is that it's not original. All of the movies except for one are not original ideas. They're basically adaptations that were turned into something different and adapted to be action thrillers in the summer. So Die Hard, like we talked about earlier, is adapted from the 1979 novel Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe. Die Hard 2 was adapted from the 1987 novel 58 Minutes by Walter Rager. Die Hard with a Vengeance, Die Hard 3, was adapted from a script called Simon Says by Jonathan Hensley. Die Hard 4, Live Free or Die Hard, was based on a 1997 article, A Farewell to Arms, written for Wired magazine by John Carlin. It also drew on a script 20th Century Fox owned called WW3.com, which dealt with a massive cyber terrorism attack against the U.S. and was nearly put into production in 2001, but was ultimately abandoned because of the September 11th attacks. Interestingly enough, the only original screenplay again is Die Hard 5, which is might be the worst, or is the worst of the series, and might be attribute to the fact that it was just its own movie and they didn't have anything to kind of really go off of, which probably hurts it a whole bunch. The other materials don't basically do the source material scene for scene, but they do change major elements to make it work, and I think that's a pretty good job on the people who are making the movie's part. So in Die Hard, the protagonist in Thorpe's original story, Joseph Leland, Frank Sinatra plays, is a retired police officer who's unhappily divorced, like John McClane, but he's trying to save his daughter instead of his wife. And instead of an old grouchy cop, they went with a younger, more quippy cop with John McClane. And again, imagine Sinatra calling through air ducts and saying yippee-ki-yay in a movie. So making that small change of changing the cop to a younger, quippy cop really changes the movie in a big way. Die Hard 2, again, was based on the book 58 Minutes in 1987. And basically this movie, in the book, he takes out a group of terrorists in an airport, but the plane crashes before his wife gets there, which is a little bit darker. But in the hands of director Haney Harlan, it becomes bigger, louder, more violent, and considerably more expensive, with a budget of $70 million and costs twice as much as the original. Still makes a bunch of money, but there was a distinct change from making it just like a cop who watches his wife die in a plane to a bigger, louder, more explosions, and lighting a cigarette and saying yippee-ki-yay and throwing a thing to blow up a plane. Die Hard 3.
These films are so ridiculous when you explain them just as they are.
Well, yeah, you can do that with pretty much almost any 80s film at this point. Like, I think people have their entire brand made off of this stuff.
I'm not picking on Die Hard. It's just like, if you describe an 80s or early 90s movie by the most basic of their plot, it is absurd.
People had pet rocks. This is advanced for them.
Bruce Willis really wants to get a bunny back. That's caught.
That was Nicolas Cage. Thank you.
Nicolas Cage really wants to get a bunny back. Sorry.
Yeah. Simon Says for Die Hard 3 was written with the young action star Brandon Lee in mind, which I thought Kate would like.
Oh, yeah.
The script was picked up by Warner as a possible fourth Lethal Weapon movie, which is presumably why you have the two main characters in Lethal Weapon heading to New York. But instead of doing it the way that Lethal Weapon does it, they change it a little bit. So instead, the story was retooled as another McClane adventure, which would explain why the movie feels somewhat different from the previous movies. McClane's fast-talking partnership and kind of like back and forth with Samuel Jackson's Juice Carver was actually supposed to be a female in one of the drafts. But they change it to feel more like the Lethal Weapon relationship, and it just comes out to be a better thing. Because I don't know how that movie works if you change Samuel Jackson to like a female lead, and then just turns into kind of like a city sprawling violence, which is different than what we have in kind of like the close encounters that you have in Die Hard. Different than the big explosions you have in Die Hard 2. So there are some changes to it to make it a more actiony action flick, but still pretty good because they take the basis of that buddy cop type relationship. It's not even really a buddy cop relationship. It's more of like a, I don't even know what you call that, like a love hate banter relationship.
It's a
cop
relationship.
Frenemy relationship.
I'm stuck in this situation.
Stop trying to kill me, John McClane relationship.
Yeah. So Die Hard 4, I don't even remember the actual name of the movie now that I'm saying it's a non-Vietnam
movie.
Live Free.
Live free
or Die Harder.
The fact that Die Harder has not become a name has actually been one of the weirdest things of this franchise.
Right? It fits.
Die Hardest. Die Most Harder. I'm also like, I didn't look this up, but if you remember back to our Fast and the Furious episodes, Japan has like better titles for their movies than we did. So I wonder if there's like Die Hard titles.
I'm gonna look it up.
Die Hard Plane Action. I don't know. So Die Hard 4 is probably the closest to the source material. However, there were two other scripts floating around for Die Hard 4. One, this kind of goes to the point, like both were actually called Die Hardest. Both were written by Ben, I can't pronounce this guy's name, Triple Cook, but both were rejected. One was set in Tokyo where McClane's son worked for the Nakatomi Corporation, and the other was set in the Caribbean, but they didn't go with either of those. Even though I would have liked to see McClane be to shoot up shipwreck
looters. He could have been a pirate?
Ship terrorist. Yeah, he could have been a pirate. But they didn't go with that. They went with like the cyber terrorist route and kind of went with that whole cybersecurity part. Did you find our answers, Kate? Please tell me.
Names, but they're the weird names. They're so good. So Die Hard in Germany was released as Die Slowly.
Oh, wait.
Grease
That's
was,
so dark.
Grease was released as Very Hard to Die. Norway was Action Skyscraper.
Accurate.
And Poland was The Glass Trap. That one sounds classy.
Yeah, that's classy. It all sounds very on brand for each one of those.
And then in Spain, Die Hard 2, Die Harder was The Jungle 2, Red Alert.
What?
Yeah.
They're at an airport.
I know. They're not even in the jungle.
Yeah. Die Hard with a Vengeance in 95 is Die Hard Mega Hard in Denmark.
I like that. Die Hard Mega Hard.
Live Free or Die Hard was Die Hard 4.0, the most expansive of your life in Hungary.
Yeah, I think that's like it was when I was doing the research for this, it was kind of like the also known as Die Hard 4.0. Like, why not just like Die Hard 4?
Yeah.
But also, like, at this point, with them doing Live or Die Hard with a Vengeance, if they would have done Die Hardest for the fourth movie, I think that would have even felt off. So it's kind of just, what are you doing at this point?
And finally, A Good Day to Die Hard is Tough Nut to Crack, A Great Day to Die, Lithuania.
Is that even a line in the movie?
But it's 33 American movies. The list is 33 American movies with hilarious foreign titles.
Interesting.
This is
I like
so
that.
Good, by the way.
So right, Die Hard 5, the last one, had an original screenplay, but like it doesn't really because it still takes some influences from previous scripts. So the idea that McClane's son teaming up. Or McClane teaming up with his son, again, emerge from Die Hard 4.
Yeah.
So it's, like, kind of, sort of original. But the early drafts were darker. In the darker versions of it, McClane's son was actually killed, and McClane hits up, like, Moscow and Afghanistan and all kinds of stuff to find out who the culprit was. So it turns into a more of, like, a revenge action film than a kind of, like, father-son thing, which might have been better. I don't know. I think that would have been cooler because then you get a kind of different version of John McClane than what we get in the fifth one.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure like if Die Hard 5 just does bad because they just kind of go over the top with it or because they don't really have too much to base their movie on. Because if you kind of look at all of the adaptations, they're basically the same with like minor changes. And this one's just like, hey, we're just going to do whatever we want. And John McClane's gonna ride out of a helicopter in a tanker.
You're hurting me.
So is this Fast and the Furious? Because that sounds like Fast and the Furious moves.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the sad part is it goes way over the top, but then it goes into like very like. I don't want to say neutered, but it's just, like, so toned down in general. Like, we talk about it being too dark for that, but, like, then it gets to, like, I don't know, just, I guess I watch the older movies and, like, how much you see, like, what goes into the other ones versus, they can't even say Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, in the movies.
Like, yeah, and there's also boobies in the first movie.
Yes, there is.
PG-13 movies is very interesting.
Because I understand people going from PG-13 to going to R, but, I mean, it's the same problem I have if you go from R to PG-13. I guess, to me, once you set your tone, this is what we're going with.
Yeah.
And I guess it's also one of those you can change right there, but if you're trying to change, like, we already have three established hard R movies to two other movies that are... I think the fourth one is R, I'm not 100% sure. The fifth one I don't believe is.
I don't think Die Hard 4 is R.
I don't think... I
can't think of it.
I don't remember
if they can't say... That would have been their one F word, I think. If.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't remember if it is or not. I know it's if it is, it's like a very like closely...
Yeah. PG-13.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I just don't like when we go back and forth.
Yeah. Three is R.
Samuel Jackson says fuck in the movie.
Two
like
is
80
R.
times.
One is R.
Yeah. Like I said, they go from R and like their hard R's to PG-13.
I wonder
like,
how many.
A good Die Hard 5 is an R.
Is it an R? I think that might just be from the over the top
violence.
Yeah. I wonder how many movies Samuel Jackson is in where he doesn't say motherfucker. That's something I want to know. I want to know that statistic.
Star Wars.
Okay, so one.
Star Wars for one.
Which is very disappointing, by the way. That's the only thing I ever wanted from Star Wars, and I didn't.
Rise of the Skywalker's final scene would have been better with "Get up, motherfucker." But no, I do genuinely wonder that because the like saying the F word, because I'm sure I've expended R's for this episode, or we all have. That gets you an R rating super quick. And it seems like I only know Samuel Jackson as saying those words in at least one sentence in his movie. It's his thing.
Yeah, he's probably contractually obligated to say it at least once in a movie.
I wonder if he's like, I'll be in your movie, but I get the one F-bomb.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on from there, so you have these adaptations, but at the heart of it, it's still McClane being, at least in the first three movies, being a different kind of action hero that we're used to at this point. So we talked before how Bruce Willis was far from the first choice for this movie, and the other choices for the movie were essentially your prototype action stars from the 70s and early and even to the late 80s. Casting Bruce Willis really goes against that kind of masculinity that we see with Stallone and Schwarzenegger.
Is it masculinity which is basically, or muscularity?
Muscularity. Well, muscularity. I mean, they're different. Yeah, muscularity. Yeah,
muscularity can be completely different than masculinity. Yeah.
So the muscularity.
Does he have a lot of mass?
How big is Bruce Willis? I think that's what I need to.
I don't think he's as big as you think he is.
I think he's tiny.
I don't think he is either.
He's going to be like, what, 5'11"? I'm going to do like 5'11".
No, he's 6 foot. Yeah. Which like, also isn't tiny. Like
it's not tiny, but it's definitely not like compared to, I'm pretty sure, the other two.
It's not Adam Driver size. It's not even Samuel Jackson size.
It's not even Sylvester Stallone or Schwarzenegger.
I'm
we should be comparing.
I saw Skywalker this morning. And
I mean,
he's tall and broad.
Stallone's not tall either, though.
No, Stallone's tiny, but Stallone also has it. I think.
But he's also jacked and on steroids.
Exactly.
Yes. Which is still the weirdest thing.
He's
I don't
not
know if
wide
we ever,
this way. He's wide this way.
Which I don't know if we ever actually everybody ever wants to have that discussion that they found like all those steroids in the 75-year-old Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, how do you think he's doing Expendables? Steroids.
Well, we know that, but it's still, like, weird.
The thing is, I don't know the history of Arnold Schwarzenegger with him, but I feel like Arnold wouldn't just because he's from another country, or he might use them more. I don't know, but I feel like
have you seen how many times Russia's been banned from the Olympics?
I know, but I'm just like...
What did you think they were getting banned for? Eating cereal?
The myth is even better that so he can get drop kicked and not moved if he doesn't use steroids.
Well, to be fair, the sad part is whether he used steroids or didn't use steroids, he's still a big boy. There was nothing like
naturally. If he didn't pack on all that muscle, he's still a big boy.
Yeah, he is still like large
and
in charge. Oh, we did it. So basically you have those two as kind of your big prototype action stars, and you still have even past kind of like the muscularity of those two, you have, you know, the suave, cool James Bond action types. You have the, you know, Timothy Dalton in the late 80s, but you really don't have a everyday kind of classic Joe hero until we get John McClane. And if you look at him, I mean, I described him as a drunk and divorced multiple times and estranged from his kids. I think it's not really about his size or stature, but I think it's more about the idea of him being kind of like mortal and wisecracking and somehow still is able to save the day. And I think more than this, he's just not kicking doors down and shooting 14 bad guys with a pistol that seemingly has unlimited bullets.
Not yet.
You know, he's sneaking. Not yet. He's like sneaking around in vents. He's although he's not like the intelligent guy, he's still outsmarting terrorists with his knowledge of being a police officer. He's cracking wise, and he also like gets his ass kicked a bunch, at least in the first three films. Like, he gets his ass kicked, but he still is able to win out the day. And it's hard to say that when you have, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger hip shooting shotguns and Sylvester Stallone as Rambo, James Bond in the suit getting all the ladies. Like, he's a different kind of action hero.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that they talked about in that thing, that like that Arnold and Stallone and like the other action guys at the time didn't want to take the role because they're like, this guy's not doing anything. He's running away the whole movie. And when he does do something, he's getting beat. And then he gets outsmarted by Hans because he literally has Hans. And then Hans is like, oh, no, this is a California accent. And
oh, my God.
and so they don't want to take that. And that's why he got it, which I think is really cool because it's kind of like having diversity comes in a lot of different forms. And Bruce Willis is a diverse action hero in a different way, which is really cool. And he also, my favorite part in Die Hard 3 is when he's hungover. And Samuel Jackson's like, what's your problem? He's like, well, the first problem is I'm hungover.
Which I was gonna, like, basically the thing, probably why I like this franchise. This is like probably the only 80s like action franchise I actually like. I don't care for Terminator. I don't care for Rambo. I actually hate Rambo. Rambo's terrible. I'll at least give a little bit on Terminator. I do not care about Rambo. But no, because I just like that I don't care for like the meathead muscular people that just kick down everything. I didn't mind him, and I guess him being drunk and divorced the whole time, I guess when you grow up with a crowd hood where divorce is very common, you used to see it's very relatable. how many parents
you
I have?
Too
like 25. Yeah, just go through 25 parents, you'll be fine. I guess I've always liked that about him, especially he's not even a good cop, he's an above average cop.
His power rating is 1.1, not 1.5.
He's not even 1.5. Yeah. He's not even Batman at 1.5 scale. He's literally like 1.1. And literally, I think he's just fueled by alcohol and like stupidity half the time. And maybe I've been fueled by alcohol a lot of times in my life, but I mean, I like the difference of it. I don't like a lot of the 80s franchise. I mean, I do like James Bond, even though probably more of like when you go different, I guess, eras of Bond and whatnot. But I don't know. I've always liked John McClane way over anything Schwarzenegger, Stallone, or even any of the other, like, weird action stars of the 80s. I guess Kurt Russell wasn't bad, but still.
You just like his hair.
His hair looked just like my hair half the time, so it's fine.
So we found the people that Matt sees himself in. A drunk divorce man who crawls around in air vents and good-haired Kurt Russell.
Have you not seen? Yeah. Kate never saw Escape from like Los Angeles.
I know, and then I saw it, and I said, "You need to dress up like Snake Plissken," and you were like, "Sure." And then it never happened.
I know, and then I have to listen to everybody go Metal Gear Solid. I'm like, "Shut up! That's not what we're talking about here." You know where he got that from?
Kurt Russell does a cop movie, doesn't he? Isn't it called like Blue or something?
I don't know. I think
pretty sure Kurt Russell does a cop.
But also, every man in the 80s has at least one cop movie under his belt.
But it is weird because we do get this, and we also, as Adrian touched on, we do get Lethal Weapon. Obviously, we compare it to the third movie, but like Lethal Weapon is basically two cops who are pretty much like a little above average, who hate each other but love each other, and just get beat up for five movies. Like, Jet Li just kicked the shit out of like Danny Glover and Mel Gibson for like an hour and a half.
But I think Lethal Weapon's great. I love Lethal Weapon, but I think there's still better shots, and like they do more kind of ridiculous stuff with their guns, while you have McClane, you know, being like, to a certain extent, he's kind of like a why am I here kind of guy too.
Yes.
Like he's just trying to go pick his wife up from the airport.
And then he ends up having to worry about whether they're getting divorced. Like, I gotta bring her chocolates, I gotta wipe this alcohol off my breath. Like, we can do this, guys. We pull it together for Christmas.
Well, that's what I like about 3, because 3 is just like, he has, like, I'm here because he made me be here. I don't want to be here either, Samuel, or Zeus. I don't want to be here either.
Yeah, I mean, he almost doesn't go to the Christmas party because he's like, I don't even want to go. And then he's there.
So this
to deal
is
with
Matt.
That.
This is Matt if Matt was an action hero.
Moving on from there, we have Hans Gruber as the villain, and So on this, in this piece, I know Hans Gruber, like, if you go through all the lists, Hans Gruber is one of, like, the best villains, like, ever in media. But I think he changes the villain up a little bit in terms of the same, not in the exact same way that Bruce Willis does for action heroes, but Hans Gruber gives us a different kind of villain in action where you kind of, like, love to hate him a little bit because he's, like, so good in his role. This might just be Alan Rickman. This might be, like, what he does with the character. But the way that I see it, I see Hans Gruber as basically kind of like one of the big affably evil villains we have in film. And affably evil is basically like your kind of, well, I mean, so most villains you see, right, have like personalities or mannerisms that kind of underscore how evil they are. So like really like, you know, someone's evil because they'll go kick a puppy or they'll, you know, shoot people randomly or they'll do all this other stuff. But then you have villains who are considered affably evil and there's really nothing separating them from normal people other than, you know, they want to take over the world or they want to go rob a bank. So they'll invite you to dinner, they'll pet your dog, but if you piss them off, they might shoot you, kind of thing.
They're great.
Yeah, they're probably the best villains, to be honest. And this is basically Hans Gruber. And to be honest, some of the other villains that we see in Die Hard, you know, they're largely polite, intelligent, typically attractive, respectful to the hero, but again, won't hesitate to kill people. Like we see Han shoot Ellis. Ellis deserved to die in the first movie anyway.
Yes.
But when he shoots Takagi because he doesn't want to give him like the access numbers to the safe, you know, was treating him very nicely until he knew that he wasn't going to get what he wanted out of him, and then he shoots him. And to, like, I just want to stress again, like, this isn't, like, this is a trope that we haven't seen, like, there was this thing before we saw Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber, because you see lots of comic book villains have this kind of thing about them. But I think with the success of Alan Rickman as the affably evil protagonist, I'm not sure if we get other notable villains like Deacon Frost in Blade, Hannibal Lecter to some degree, Hans Landa in Inglourious Basterds, even into kind of like TV, you know, Q in Star Trek, Gus in Breaking Bad, Captain Barbossa in Pirates of the Caribbean. To some degree, the greater good people in Hot Fuzz, and even Simon Gruber in Die Hard 3 is basically more or less affably evil as well, in a lot of those respects.
Well, I will say, obviously, we knew we had him in the comic book villain characters, and I think, trying to think of movies that have these type of villains outside of even maybe James Bond, like actually in a film sense of like, I don't know how many we have before this as well either.
Yeah. I mean,
because the comic book, we weren't getting comic book movies every year the way we were back then.
Either. Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of what I wanted to kind of point. Cause you do like you mentioned, you do have some of them in James Bond, but James Bond isn't the same kind of action movie the way that Die Hard's like the same kind of action movie.
At least the older ones.
You can, yeah.
Not
yeah,
what we got
exactly.
Today or whatever that is.
Exactly. And then you can even make an argument that The Godfather has a kind of the affably evil villain, but it's also not an action movie kind of either, right? So we do kind of have those two big examples, but after that, we start seeing them more and more. And to your point, I mean, we do have them in comics, but I think after we see them in the movie, we start getting them more and more on, you know, the small screen and the big screen. So without the success of this, I don't know. I mean, Thanos, Loki, Magneto, Cell, Dragon Ball Z, Shang Tsung to some extent in Mortal Kombat, basically every Final Fantasy villain you can think of have this kind of traits that we see in Hans Gruber.
Shang Tsung sucks out people's souls. So, like, that is something that is show, like, he.
Yeah,
he
but he looks so good doing it.
He's evil.
But he does look
but
so
he looks
good
really good doing it. And he's like, hey, bring whatever you want. I'll be very fair what you bring to this tournament. But just know, if you mess with me, I'm going to suck your soul out.
It doesn't matter what
like
you do to people. Self
chills and like waits for an entire year for these people to train just so he can wipe the floor with them later on.
As long as you look good doing it, it doesn't matter.
Exactly, which brings me to my next point, where Hans Gruber basically starts like kind of the thirst trap we have for villains. because even my wife Stefani, she's like, whoa, is that Alan Rickman? Damn. I was like, that's Alan Rickman.
I yelled at Matt. I was like, Matt! Is this really Alan Rickman? He's hot. Yeah.
I don't have to listen to Harry Potter people. I was like, Alan Rickman came from Die Hard. And that's what everybody knows.
I knew him.
Yeah. So
Dogma's great, but I remember Matt Damon and Ben Affleck way more.
I remember.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if we get Thanos memes or things like that if we don't have an attractive Hans Gruber as a villain in the late 80s.
I also know for certain that if this came out this year, everybody would be like doing as much thirst as they could for Hans, because it no like at least like the last two Christmases when I've started to notice it, people have been doing like they're watching Die Hard for the first time, and there is Hans Gruber thirst, and it's great. And I have a tweet ready once we're done recording, so I can be like, yeah, we recorded our Christmas episode, and my favorite thing I said was Hans Gruber can get it.
Yeah, she's in KO think... when she's like, that's really Jeremy Irons. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Hans Gruber, the Gruber brothers, the Gruber brothers got it for sure.
I also,
and I don't,
like,
it's hard to, like, what other villain, I mean, I guess I defer this question to you, Kate, but, like, what other villains up until 1988 do you have that you're like, damn, they can get it?
So I can name a lot, but they're all from exploitation cinema, which is like, they're supposed to be that way because it's the brand of exploitation cinema. But like from like big blockbuster stuff, I mean, I don't really think there are, because you have a lot like 70s and so 60s has hot villains. But, like, 70s and 80s, like, leading up to this, I don't think so, because a lot of 70s and 80s villains are defined by, like, the, oh, no, scarring and disabilities make me terrible, evil people, and no one will love me trope as the villains.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, Hans Gruber.
He just wanted to be rich.
And so, yeah, like, and... that also, like, I do think that that does kind of start things, but I also notably have a blind spot in the 70s and 80s so far as, like, open movies, like, or, like, big movies, because I really just lean towards grindhouse things for the 70s, because I'm not a huge fan of a lot of that stuff, but, yeah, or, like, outside, so, yeah. I'm not the best person, I guess. I don't know.
You tell me Jaws was not a great villain.
Jaws did you have thirst for
what
Jaws?
About, what about Alien?
Thick boy.
Or Alien or Predator? I mean, we got all the...
Jaws was a thick boy.
I don't know, man.
Or, hold Predator, on, the giant marshmallow guy giant. In Ghostbusters?
Also a thick boy.
Moving on to kind of my last, but why though... that I have outside of like anything else we want to wrap up with, but basically this changes again, like we said, changes action, and we after this into the 90s and even kind of into the 2000s to some extent, you basically get Die Hard and an XYZ.
Yes.
So the movie was an overwhelming success, obviously had substantial box office earnings. So obviously this is going to make other studios want to do the same thing. And the formula is pretty simple. Like all you need is a lone hero, an enclosed locale, a band of witty terrorists with hostages, a bomb, a chemical weapon, cool accents, and you're basically set. So some of these movies are a success, some of them aren't, but they're basically Die Hard in XYZ. So just to name a couple of them, Die Hard on a Bus, Speed, in 1994. Die Hard on a Mountain, Cliffhanger, 1993. Die Hard in the White House, Olympus Has Fallen, and White House Down that came out in 2013, which is, I don't know.
One has Morgan Freeman, one has Aaron Eckhart? Is that the difference?
No.
Yeah.
One has Aaron Eckhart, Morgan Freeman, one has Morgan Freeman and Gerard Butler. One has Aaron Eckhart and Jamie Foxx.
That's what it is, yes.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you which one is which. Like, I don't know which one is the other movie.
I only know you have Fallen, because I saw Angel Has Fallen.
Die Hard in a Mall is basically Paul Blart Mall Cop in 2009. As silly as that is.
Oh, God.
It's basically the same movie if you like get down to like the nitty gritty of it. Die Hard in the Stadium, Sudden Death.
This movie is great. I want to talk about this movie. This is one of my favorite, all time favorite movies. It is not the greatest movie cinematography wise, but you get Jean-Claude Van Damme playing goalie, Pete and the Penguins. You have the Bud Light commercials with the Penguins. Also, this is like the one movie, my first time I was ever in Austin, where we were bored, and we went to a three-story Skolotsky's and rented this movie from like a Hollywood Video.
Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme basically like is in a hockey uniform, roundhouse kicking people in
yes.
the movie, essentially.
So,
you have a killer penguin. My mom loved these movies. This is what my mom watched all the time. This is not even half of this is probably like me, but this is what my mom likes. And then I'm like, son, you're going to watch this because this is what I'm watching. My mom probably owns and has seen every Jean-Claude Van Damme movie probably like 7 times.
Yeah, Bloodsport's really, really good. I love Bloodsport.
Is awesome. Watch it right now. So as much as this is like me watching this, I'm telling you, my mom's like, son, we're going to watch this because I'm going to watch it. And you're just going to learn violence.
Also looks really good for being how old he is.
Yeah. That's what happens when you've been working out since you were like 12 and you don't stop.
Like, he is what Tom Cruise will be.
And you have Die Hard in a Plane, which there are multiple of them. Passenger 57 in 1992.
Also great, and also one of my mom's favorite movies.
In 1996.
I've watched so many of these, and my mom, this is my mom's brand, so she should have been on this episode at this point.
Also, like, want to throw in Snakes on a Plane, which is basically Die Hard with snakes on a plane. Because it's Samuel Jackson.
Also, Con.
Just instead of terrorists, he gets snakes, and it's, you know, basically the same movie. Die Hard on a Prison Plane, Con Air, 1997.
I have seen this movie so many times, like probably way too many, because like every time that it was on TBS, I was watching it. I just loved it. I don't know why. I just really did, and I think it all came from Nick Cage's accent in the film. But
did you see his hair in that movie? Great. A lot.
Yeah, his accent that kind of goes in and out throughout the movie.
Oh, good.
Die Hard on the President's Plane with Air Force One.
This is Harrison Ford. This also has one of the worst lines, and I can't even remember what it is. Like, oh, get off my plane or something like that.
That's a fantastic line. Get off my plane. I also like it because of that Family Guy episode where they do the flashback where he's like throwing people off the plane who are skydiving. Get off my plane. Then you have Die Hard, but with The Rock, with Skyscraper 2018. Not terrible.
Awful.
Not terrible.
Awful.
Not. Have you even seen it?
Not.
I saw enough because I knew they ripped off Die Hard, and I was like, I don't need this.
It's literally Die Hard. It's just
It's literally Die Hard.
But it's anti-Die Hard because it's the largest man in existence being John McClane.
But they give him one leg. They rip off one of his legs to make it even.
Yeah, make it even, yeah. I mean, and there's also like plenty of others that you can think of. And I think one of the other interesting thing here is that some of these roles in some of these movies, like we just talked about, are starring people who turned down the role of John McClane, like Stallone and Harrison Ford, just to name a couple. Like, they turned it down, but then in the 90s immediately went and were John McClane. Yeah. And that's kind of like the legacy of this movie at the end of the day, because if anything ever comes out from here until the end of time that features a average Joe or just like a guy in the wrong place at the wrong time, terrorists, and him having to defeat them by himself, it's basically going to get called Die Hard into something. Like, we're probably going to get Die Hard in space in something.
Hold on, I'm going to Google.
I have to look that up. Is there a
Die Hard in space?
Die Hard in space. I mean, and if you really want to get, like, really down to it, the other Christmas movie that people probably put above Die Hard, Home Alone, Die Hard, but with a child protecting
Judge
his house
Dredd.
From robbers.
Die Hard!
There we go. Judge Dredd.
I love Judge Dredd, though, but also Die Hard. Oh, my God.
See, Kate, you've been watching all these movies, and you just didn't want to watch the source material.
Yeah, basically. You also have Die Hard, but in Alcatraz.
Oh, The Rock.
Yes.
With, I love
The Rock.
The Rock.
I love
The Rock.
The Rock
is amazing movie,
too.
That
is a really good movie.
So there's a Die Hard for everybody. You just got to find the right locale, essentially.
Nick Cage took the reins for a while. I mean, that's how this worked.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I got, man. It's a fun franchise that has spawned a different kind of action hero. You know, changes like the prototype of what we think of an action hero to kind of be really anybody who works. And then Hans Gruber being a thirst trap and then a Die Hard in a thing is at the end of the day what we get. And then we get, you know, the one quotable line that we can't even say in movies anymore.
So what I'm going to say and look up real fast, because I'm pretty sure... Because basically, I feel like Wesley Snipes took over this role as well for a while there and did a ton of these movies. I know he's in Passenger 57, but I'm trying to think. There was two other ones that I'm trying to think of, like, well, not one. I'm trying to think of, like, what was Money Train? Money Train is technically the same thing. Buddy cop action film starring Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson with Jennifer Lopez in there.
I mean, and he's also kind of relatively an affably evil person in Demolition Man, kind of, sort of. Yeah. So,
because I knew, like,
also, I mean, and in the movies that made us, he interviewed for the part of what's his face. So, like, you know, it all makes sense. It all comes together.
It does, because I was like, I knew they had Passenger 57. I think Money Train was the other one I was thinking of.
What was obviously that one movie on Netflix that was really awful that had Shaggy? With the Workaholics guys.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
That
oh,
one is
gosh.
Die Hard with Idiots.
Yes, that is Die Hard with Idiots. Gosh damn it. That movie, I was like, you know what? Let's see a parody of Die Hard, see if I like it. I didn't like it.
Brooklyn Nine-Nines is actually so freaking good. Game Over Man. Game Over Man is Die Hard with Idiots. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yes. So Wesley Snipes stars in to get up here for his whole thing. Is he has Money Train. Obviously, he had the villain of Demolition Man. He has Sensui Boiling Point, Rising Sun, Drop Zone. And then he actually ends up playing in U.S. Marshals, I believe. Yeah.
Every time I hear the words U.S. Marshals, I just think of Wild Wild West and U.S. Marshal.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is room to do, you know, Die Hard, but a Western. Die Hard in Space, I'd be down for. I'd be totally down for a Die Hard in Space.
Fantasy, but Die Hard.
Yeah. Die Hard with elves. But with elves. Exactly. I'd be down for it.
I mean,
that's really all
formula.
I got,
like,
man.
The thing is, like,
technically, that's The Last Boy Scout. Have you ever seen that? What did the chicken say? Which is also Bruce Willis.
I genuinely think that there's a beauty in these kinds of action movies. Like, and I don't think Skyscraper hits it because it's so absurd and, like, giant and so much special effects. But, like, there's something personal about action movies like the first Die Hard that make things really intimate and kind of, like, a small setting. Also, like, the ability to do it on, like, a smaller budget or, like, a small-ish budget. But, like, I appreciate about that, like, from a lot of movies. But now that I've seen three, I definitely want to go. Well, I want to finish three once we're done recording, and I want to go watch two because I do genuinely think that, like, there's a lot in these Die Hard movies that make them kind of sit. But I was talking with Matt before we started. The one thing that I worry about is, like, this formula of, containment plus fight terrorists kind of gets disrupted when you add cell phones and the internet. And so, like, because you always have, like, these really weird, like, in Skyscraper, they had to have taken them all down and, like, these weird things, like, these weird, like, story reaches. But, like, watching, like, Die Hard 3, where it's like, oh, crap, who's the 21st president? And they have to rely on this random trucker who just so happens to know all these facts to give them the answer is a lot different than watching a movie now. It's like, oh, well, why don't they just Google that? They just need to find a computer and they can Google that. It's a different type of stakes because it's all inherently put into humans, which is why I think I really like them, and I'm happy I'm on the Die Hard train now. So, yippee-ki-yay.
Die Hard put on a train. Is there a Die Hard put on a train? I'm pretty sure
there is, right?
Somewhere.
Actually, there is, and I'm trying to think what... Hold on. Because I've seen that movie, and I'm trying to think what it is.
I want to go watch Sudden Death now. That movie's ridiculous.
The movie is great. Movie is amazing.
Under Siege is Die Hard on a boat. Under Siege 2 is Die Hard on a train.
Oh, okay. That's right. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Though Masterminds is apparently Die Hard in a school.
That's awesome. I don't know. I think once you, like, make yourself like that, you're that. Once you become, like, the skeleton for every other movie, I think you've done your job.
Yeah, definitely done your job. And it's hard, I think, hard to replicate, because even though we have all these really good movies, none of them spawn like what this has spawned. None of them are making $101.4 billion over their lifetime. But I think it does leave open that avenue to do it. And I think what a lot of these other ones miss is kind of the comedy, because to be honest, like, Die Hard 1, 2, and 3 are pretty funny. Pretty funny movies with lots of quips and things like that. And just make sure you sprinkle in a little bit of comedy in my Die Hard in space, and I'm there. 10 out of 10. Do you have any final thoughts, Matt?
So yeah, no, I've always liked the Die Hard franchise. I think it's great. I do think I'm with the Kate of, like, I don't mind watching them, and I do like a lot of, like, the 90s stuff, and obviously it's a very simplistic formula. I do think adding cell phones kills a lot of stuff that we can do nowadays that I don't think people realize, or makes everything overly complicated, because it's like, why don't you just Google it or make a phone call? I don't, like, the sad part, as much as this, as you probably already learned from this, has been a genre that I've watched a ton of movies from, I don't care for them as much anymore, to be honest. I don't think they're as well made. I don't know if it's because they are, like, Skyscraper, you think I'd be japing at it. I thought it looked awful, and I wasn't wrong.
It's not personal. It's
not, well, because you, but no, like, I do think it's a genre that gets overlooked a lot in the 90s, and I don't like it. I know they try to replicate it much. I don't think it's well done. It's a weird thing that gets looked over a lot in the 90s, and it's sad because I think people just forget that the 90s exist a lot of times. They feel like they're in the 90s, but they don't. So I've seen a lot of these movies. I enjoy them. I always think Die Hard's a Christmas movie. I enjoy rewatching the first three. I'll probably never, ever attempt to go watch the last two, especially that last one. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. But I see why people like them. I think we'll still get the formula. They're still going to make these movies. Obviously, they keep trying to reboot these franchises at this point, which is kind of sad. I'd rather just get new things, but we'll guess we'll see what happens moving forward. But I do. Now, I'm glad Kate finally watched it. This was one of the big contentions we had when we started this podcast, was when Adrian and I found out that she never watched this movie, and we shamed her, because you should be shamed if you've not watched this movie.
Okay, not just the podcast, but, like, I would say something in just us talking about movies as two humans who live together and are together. You'd be like, yeah, but you haven't watched Die Hard, so can I really take that taste into account? And it's like,
I mean,
got him.
I'm not wrong. If the fact that they made a whole entire genre with Die Hard on X, Y, and Z, and the fact you haven't seen the original, I mean, yeah.
I mean, it's basically required pop culture writing or watching if you want to get references and stuff like that. At the very least, you should watch it just so you can see John McClane say Yippee-ki-yay. Well, the Christmas party, have a few laughs. That's all I got, man. Let's get out of here.
So, as always, I think, yeah, y'all are listening to this episode on Christmas. So if you celebrate, Merry Christmas. If you don't, Happy Holidays. Enjoy your time off. You probably really need it. I know I do. And you can find our podcast at ButWhyThePC on Twitter. And if you want to support us a little bit more, head on over to patreon.com/ButWhyThePC. And you can find me on Twitter at OmenMithrandir. I am only being slightly annoying with Rise of the Skywalker. Adrian?
Yeah, but you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SUPERRUIZ93.
Matt?
I'm gonna go grab a beer.